Hello and welcome everyone to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Hornsby, and today we're going to talk about something that's very important to any of you who have kids or who are thinking about having kids and want to help them avoid the student loan mess that you have had to battle with yourself. So I've got a special guest on today to help me do that. We've got Mary Morris joining us, who's the CEO of Virginia's 529 plan. I guess it's Virginia 529, technically. Mary, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Travis. Good to be with you.
So for our folks out there that really are not experts in finance, personal finance, that just want to understand what a 529 plan is, can you just describe what it is and why somebody might use one?
Sure. Well, 529 plans are used for tax advantage education savings. And the 529 comes from the Internal Revenue Code that gives us our special tax advantages. So they have to be sponsored by a state, hence Virginia 529. Every state except Wyoming, and they work with Colorado, has its own 529 program. Most of them, like Virginia's, are national in scope. So we have participants from all around the country who are working with Virginia 529 in one of our education savings programs.
Cool. So people have a lot of different ones to choose from, right? So what might cause somebody that lives in Virginia to go with Virginia 529? And maybe why would somebody maybe in Florida consider using Virginia 529? And maybe why would somebody, you know, in a state that has a tax deduction for their state plan, why would they not use one? So can you kind of explain that to people? Because I'm sure that's a common point of confusion.
Sure. And you're absolutely right. I always tell people, look at your home state first. Look at their plan, see if you like it, see if you like the options. So some of it has to do with what your investment options are. Some of it has to do with cost. You want to take a look and see what the costs are for your state's program. We have what we call a direct plan, Invest 529, and many states have that. And then we also have what we call an advisor plan, which is College America. And that's through a partnership we have with the American Funds. So individuals that work with a financial advisor, for example, are more likely to be in the College America plan. They may have a lot of American Funds options. And so there are a lot of reasons to do that. A state like Florida doesn't have an income tax at all. Florida, Texas, a number of states just don't have an income tax. And so the state benefits, 36, I think it is, states, including Virginia, you get a state tax deduction for your contribution to your 529 program. 529s are funded with after-tax dollars. They grow tax-free forever as long as you put money in. That's the federal and state tax advantage, that they grow tax-free. And you never pay tax on the earnings as long as you use your account for qualified education expenses, which includes any form of post-secondary education, a lot of certificate and training programs, grad school. And then it can also, we'll talk about this more, I suspect, but it can also be used for some student debt reduction, as well as private schools now. Those are two fairly recent additions. But in addition to that tax advantage, again, most states that assess an income tax, you get a state tax deduction for your contributions. So you want to look to your state first and see if they have one and how generous that is. But for a state that doesn't have one, that may be a reason that you would look outside your state. There are a handful of states that have a tax, an income tax, but they don't provide a deduction for it. And then there's another handful, Pennsylvania, Missouri, a couple of other states come to mind, that give you a tax deduction regardless of which state's 529 program you select. That's called parity. And so you are then free to look at which program suits you best.
Yeah, I used to live in Missouri, and I was able to open up a 529 plan through Vanguard and get a state income tax deduction, even though I didn't use the state plan in Missouri, because they, I guess, let you take one wherever you lived, right?
Right,
and then
right.
Then I moved to North Carolina, and they don't offer one, I think, from what I can understand. Is that right? Or they don't offer a deduction?
They don't offer tax deduction. Right. They have a plan. It's interesting. They used to have a state income tax deduction for your 529 contributions. A number, probably 5 years ago, state did a sort of a whole rethink, and they reduced state income taxes generally. And in doing that, they eliminated the state income tax deduction for 529 plans. So yeah, that's gone now in North Carolina, but they used to have it.
So, you know, obviously somebody that lives in Virginia would want to probably use your plan because of the state income tax deduction. I assume they have to use your plan to get that deduction, correct?
They do. And we have a pretty generous tax deduction. So that's the other thing you look at. Some states, Colorado, for example, has, I believe they still have an unlimited tax deduction each year for your contributions. So it's pretty compelling to stick with the Colorado plan. Other states, have larger or smaller ones. In Virginia, it's a $4,000 per student per account deduction, or per account owner per account. So in Virginia, you can have multiple accounts. Someone that wants to really maximize their state income tax deduction can just have multiple accounts. You know, a husband and wife or partners can have accounts for each child. You can have multiple accounts per child and take the tax deduction. I mean, some states don't have that. It's just cumulative. But, you know, some states, ours is $4,000 per account per year with an unlimited carry forward. Some states it's $10,000. So again, you want to do your homework. And then you can have more than one account. So if you want to have an account in your home state to get the tax deduction, and then you like the offerings or you think it's more convenient, you can have another account in a different state's program as well. So you don't want to accumulate more than you might need for your education expenses over time.
So one question is if you're in one of these states, like, you know, a Missouri where you can use any plan, mm-hmm. or you're in a place that has no income tax and you can use any plan. Let's say the person's considering the self-directed option. Why would they maybe go with something like a Virginia 529 plan over, say, a Vanguard 529 plan?
Personal choice. If the absolute lowest fees are what drive you, and that's a really good thing to look at. You look at fees and the Vanguard option, you're not in the Vanguard plan. You're in one of Nevada's plans, if you're in the right. Vanguard plan, I'm assuming. And Vanguard 529 is called, that's what they call it, but that's actually affiliated with the state of Nevada. So neither here nor there, but every state program has to be affiliated, or every 529 program is sponsored by or run by a state. And that's just a part of the Internal Revenue Code requirements. It helps keep the fees overall down. It helps keep the focus on helping families plan and save and making access and affordability broadly available. So most 529 plans, again, try to keep their fees down, try to provide offerings that you usually get institutional rates for a very small contribution. The Vanguard 529 has a higher initial opening rate, for example. So for someone that doesn't have, I think, $3,000, to open a Vanguard 529 program, if you don't have that to start, then that might be a limiter for some participants. You know, other states have no requirements. You can open up an account with zero contributions. Ours is $10 just to get started. We find that once you've made some commitment and start, and we always encourage people to just set it up for a recurring contribution. So if once a month you take that $10 out, you're at least starting to get it growing. So that would be one thing that you would look at. What's the initial sort of buy-in to open up the account? What are the overall account fees? You look at the expense ratio. Ours is right on our performance page. Most states make it very easy to find what those rates are. And you're looking at the combination of the asset management fee, which would be that Vanguard fee, or, you know, the fees for the underlying managers of your investment options. And then there's usually a state administrative fee as well, which can go either to the state or to the Vanguard in this example, or a census or someone who is managing the program for the state. And that combined, the administrative fees and the asset management fees, give you your expense ratio, which is, I don't want to get too far into the weeds here, but it's usually in basis points. So it's a fraction of a percent. Those fees are higher, some states are lower. So if you're agnostic on which state, you look at the fees. In Virginia, ours are slightly, and I'm talking a few basis points, higher than some states, because we have a mix of actively managed portfolios and managers and index. So you have to look at the various offerings. Again, most states have 20-ish, I would say, in the high teens or into the low 20s in terms of investment options. As with retirement, I think all states have some form of we call them a target enrollment state fund, similar to a target date retirement fund. You look and see, when do you think you're going to use these funds? And it's a progressive investment. So you don't have to come back in every year and rebalance your account and figure out what your risk appetite is. Over time, we will evolve that portfolio for you and move you from a perhaps more aggressive portfolio, one with more equity, therefore more risk in it, to something that's more conservative, that is more headed towards asset protection, capital protection. So that as you approach the time when you want to use those funds, you're less likely to lose value. You know, we're in a very volatile time right now with everything that's going on, in the geopolitical stream and inflation rising. The stock markets have gotten pretty volatile recently also. So for someone approaching college age or the time to use their account, you generally want to take that volatility out and be in a more conservative investment. So.
Well, so I mean, of course, the main thing that's going to determine success for these accounts is how much are you saving in them, right? I mean, if you're saving not a whole lot at all, you're not going to have a lot of money to use in it. And if you're saving a lot, you can even end up with maybe even, you know, more than you need.
Doesn't happen that often.
Yeah. Well, one question I've got is, so one thing that I think people are somewhat unaware of is the ability to change the name on an account and like sort of change the beneficiary of the 529 plan for somebody. So I'll just use myself as an example. We found out, you know, a couple of years ago when we were expecting that I was really, you know, I was of course very excited. And what I did is I opened up a 529 plan in my own name to get started to make that state income tax deduction before the end of the year in my own name. And then we're going to retitle that account eventually when I get around to it, but I can retitle that account without tax consequences. So could you talk a little bit about that, how somebody can even start saving for a kid's college when the kid maybe not even is born yet?
Absolutely. And that's brilliant. And we do tell people that because if you can't name it for an unborn child, but you can absolutely open it up in your own name. And I would go you a step further and say, there's absolutely no reason that everyone shouldn't have a 529 account. That's become my new mantra in recent years, that everybody should have a 529 account for themselves, for their kids, for, you know, whoever you care about, who may have educational needs. The reason being that anyone can use a 529 account. So I think when you opened up, you know, you talked about people think about having it, you know, younger families, you open up the account for your young child and you let it grow for 18 years. And, you know, in the perfect world, they go off to college, they go to a 4-year school, they finish up in 4 years and they go on and they have a happy life and they've used their 529 account. That's great. And that works for some, but that's not really the typical student even anymore or the typical family. So you want to plan for what life brings you. And in doing that, you don't know. You know, your child may or may not be ready for school right when they're 18. You yourself may not have gone to school, or you have a college degree, but you have aspirations to go to grad school. Well, start saving, because you can use your 529 account for grad school later. And even if it doesn't cover all of it, it might allow you to work fewer hours or, you know, to do some other things to make life a little bit easier as you get that additional education. And even if it's not grad school, there are, you know, opportunities to reskill and to upskill. We see that all the time. You know, a big talking point now in education is looking for pathways to education, pathways to the future. You know, you might have a child that starts at community college. A great way to bring down your total cost of higher education, start at a community college. They're a half to a third less expensive generally. You can sometimes save on your living expenses. So a great way to get started, get some of those sort of gut courses, the basics out of the way, and then move on to your dream school. It's going to might cost a little bit more, might be, you know, living away. But there are certificate programs, things that take 6 months or a year to give you a really valuable skill. There is so much need right now for medical technical professionals and, you know, all kinds of programming and just a wide array of things that you can get in less than 4 years, certainly, or even less than 2 years. Or flip it over and you want to go to grad school, you want to, you know, you're working in whatever it might be as a technician or something and you want to go on. I've seen it because I've had to spend a little time in hospital in the last few years. You know, I'll talk to nurses and they're getting ready to go back to school to be a nurse practitioner. That's a good example of that's an expensive lift. You're going to go back to school for a few years. If you've been saving in a 529 account for yourself, that's going to help you. Whether you've saved everything or not, it's going to make that more doable and it helps you set your goals. So that didn't really answer your question, but do it for yourself. But then sure, whenever you have a child, just change the name. A lot of flexibility in a 529 program. You can change beneficiaries sort of within your family tree, and you can go up and you can go down. So you could transfer an account from a child to yourself. Grandparents can open up accounts for their grandchildren and their children, and you can transfer beneficiaries. So it's actually one of the greatest estate planning tools that I know of. In a different lifetime, I was an estate planning lawyer. I did a lot of trust and estates work. And a 529 account has some tremendous advantages. It is the only thing you can do where, let's say, a grandparent can transfer significant amounts of their disposable income, their wealth, their inheritance to children and grandchildren and still keep control of it. So in a 529, they can remain the owner. They can change beneficiaries if one grandchild decides not to go to school or get the scholarship, then they can move the money from that child's account to a different grandchild. Or they just don't like what they're doing with their lives, or they don't think they're going to go to college. They can transfer beneficiaries, but they've removed it from their estate as soon as they set up the account. So a nice additional tax benefit for grandparents or parents is the estate planning piece of it. But you can transfer it to, again, aunts, uncles, nephews, nieces, cousins, anywhere up and down the family tree without adverse tax consequences.
And is that pretty easy to do? Like, say you get a check for $200 for your kid from some great aunt somewhere, and you want to put that in your 529 mm-hmm. account. Does that money have to be written out to the 529 plan, or can you just put that in your bank account yourself and then make the contribution from your own bank, from your own checkbook?
Yeah, absolutely. You can do it that way. So you can do it any way you want. Money becomes fungible at that point, right? So you can move it around and do whatever you want. The aunt could have her own account if she, you know, wants to get tax deductions and save it for herself and then transfer it at some point. Or you can make the gift. And again, one of them, it's not so recent anymore, we'd like to have more people use it, are the gifting opportunities within a 529 program. So again, most of us have pretty nice gifting platforms. That might be something you look at. If you want to encourage friends and family to make gifts to your 529 account, take a look and find a program that makes that really easy, that has a platform for it. So in Virginia 529, you can buy gift cards. You can buy an e-gift card. You can actually buy physical gift cards in some stores, and you can get information on that on our website. Others also have gift cards. There's an outfit called Gift of College. Give them a little bit of a plug. You can have anyone buy a gift card that can be used for either a 529 account or student debt reduction, and it can be put into any state's 529 program. So we've tried to make it easy to do that. So you can encourage Aunt Sally to just put it right into the account yourself. At Virginia 529, we've created a unique identifier for each of our accounts so that you can safely share that through an email or on social media. You're not giving away any account information, but someone can pick that code up and they can put the money directly into your account safely and securely by using that link. So, you know, people have found that very helpful and a nice way to get money into your account. Because you said earlier, the key is to get money in, right? We want to get people started. So it's important to do that. $10, that's fine. Whatever you can do today, just get started. If you really want to make it go, set it up for recurring contributions so it goes in once a month.
One thing that a lot of our people are doing is going for various loan forgiveness plans for their own student loans. Mm-hmm. So something like public service loan forgiveness or, you know, income-based repayment loan forgiveness, because they might have high debt-to-income ratios and that's the plan that makes the most sense. And they have their parents, you know, who want to say, hey, I feel guilty about not being able to pay for your education. Can I give you $10,000 or can I give you $20,000 or something that's not meaningful enough to actually really help them get out of debt that much faster, that is still a significant amount of money? And a very common question I get is, what can I do with it? So one interesting estate planning piece of 529 plans is that a grandparent-owned 529 plan is not counted against a child, a grandchild on their FAFSA. Is that correct?
That is correct. Now, there's a caveat on that, just like there is on everything. It's still great. So once it's paid out, then the amount that's used is actually considered income to the student, and they do have to include it. And it's actually included at a higher rate. So you just have to be careful with when you use the grandparents' money. Basically, try to save it for the senior year because you don't have to fill out a FAFSA anymore and your income doesn't matter. So, you know, there's some tips on that, and we usually have their websites that have some tips on that, or, you know, talk to an advisor on how you should pay out your 529 money. You know, use the parents' account first, use the grandparents' later. And also they do the way they calculate it, which year's income they use or which year's information has been changed recently. So they're trying to simplify FAFSA, I think, and in some ways they've complicated it some more. So,
yeah.
But you're absolutely right. On the first application, when you apply, you don't have to identify a grandparent's 529 account or a non-custodial parent's 529 account inexplicably. Hmm. I don't understand why that is, but if you have, you know, a situation where the parents are divorced, you have to be careful with that because, again, once they use it, that becomes income to the student. And the next year, they have to report that on their FAFSA, that they actually had it paid. And then, again, a lot of schools, public and private, they ask you for any resources. So quite honestly, you may have to disclose that, and it may or may not be counted for purposes of like a school's financial aid program or whatever. Does that make sense? For federal financial aid, no, you don't have to include it. But again, that's usually for like Pell Grant eligibility and for those who are not going to get that much actual financial aid, they're going to get a student loan package. So yeah, that's my admonishment to most folks is student, you know, financial aid and worrying about the FAFSA. Sure, that makes sense. But usually whether or not you qualify for that kind of federal financial aid is based on income, not on assets. Don't not put money into a 529 account because you're worried about whether or not you're going to get financial aid. It's always better, I think, to save. The more you save, the less debt you're likely to have to take on in the future. And that will certainly be true. I know a lot of your listeners have grad school debt, and that's where the real challenges come in student debt right now. When you look at the numbers, graduating from a four-year institution, most students, you know, they have in the, it's $30,000, I want to say, for like public school debt. I think the overall, it's getting closer to $40,000 in student loan debt on average for folks who are graduating from a four-year school. That still can be manageable. You know, that's more like a car payment. But grad school debt can get, that's where you get into six figures. And even though hopefully you're making more when you have a grad school degree, that's not always the case. And so, right, you're looking for how do I manage a large amount of debt? Look for an employer who gives you assistance. I would say this for student debt reduction. You know, that's one way to reduce your own student debt is to find an employer who will do a match. Some now do a match. If you're paying off student debt, they will match that with their, you know, 401k contribution for you so that you can at least be getting some retirement savings while you're paying down your student debt. Some employers, and we encourage more and more, so ask about it and maybe it will encourage them to do it, will do a 529 match. If you're putting money into a 529 account, whether it's for yourself or your kids, maybe your employer will match it. We've done that at Virginia 529 for years, and it is very popular. So, you know, talk to your employers and see what kinds of benefits they might offer in terms of assistance with student debt, as well as with 529 contributions.
Yeah. So for somebody that gets that $10,000 to $20,000 gift from the grandparents that they feel guilty about not being able to pay their kids' school, rather than waste that money on trying to pay down loans that are going to be forgiven, if that's the path that the person's on, that would be a great pot of money to seed a 529 or 529 plan with. So, you know, getting it started, like you said, doesn't require a whole lot of money. You can get it started with a pretty minimal contribution, and then you can set up recurring contributions of a very small amount of money, just whatever you can afford, right? And hopefully that amount would grow over time. Maybe you, when you get the random check in the mail from a relative to celebrate a birthday or something, that money could go into the kid's 529 plan, you know, instead of just sort of sit in a savings account earning nothing when it's very likely that your kid will go to college one day.
Absolutely. And I said, that's another thing going back to, you know, how do you decide which 529 program you want to go with? It depends on how much help you want. So one of the things we do, we send out, you know, every 4 to 6 weeks, you can be on our email list. You don't have to have an account to get that. And we try to do a lot with financial education. So beyond just saying, hey, save, put all your money with us and we'll make it grow and you know, you'll have this account. And again, that's one of the reasons the states are involved. We're trying to help people make better choices to really help them learn and to set a good course for the future. And so we send a lot of tips and articles sometimes and different ways to leverage your savings. And so, you know, right now it's tax season. Right. And we set it up in Virginia that you can contribute directly to your account when you file your taxes. So if you're going to get a refund, refund time is a great time to start seeding a 529 account. So whether you can do it directly into your account from your tax refund or whether you have to take that tax refund and put it in, it's great because that's usually found money. And if you don't think it's coming or you don't know how much and you don't spend all of it, and you save some of it, that's just a really great practice, right? Anytime you get found money, save it, bank it, put it someplace towards a future goal. So tax refund time, we do a lot of messaging for our customers. Around 529 day, May 29th, we encourage people, take a look at your account. If you haven't opened one, do it now. Get started. If you have one, but you haven't put any money in for a while, put some money in, or better yet, set up a recurring contribution. Or encourage friends and family to make gifts, make it their recurring contribution. because you can do that. A parent, a grandparent, anybody that wants to can make a recurring contribution to a 529 account as well. We make that pretty easy. And then again, like you said, birthdays, the holidays, you know, no matter what it is, whether it's Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever you might celebrate, graduations, great times. You know, everyone does graduation ceremonies for everything from kindergarten through middle school and high school. Ask people to put money into your 529 account. And all of those little ways and bigger ways help you make it towards the future.
You know, I think that one thing that's kind of interesting from the planning side that we encounter with people that have graduate school loans is some of the rules around the student loan programs have restrictions about, you know, you're not eligible if you took out loans before October 2007 and things like that. So when people only have debt from grad school, they don't have any debt from undergrad, a lot of times that makes planning better. It makes it easier. So even I would say to the listener, like, even if you expect your kids to go to grad school and take out a bunch of student loan debt, I still think it's awesome to try to give your kid a debt-free undergrad experience, you know, if that's possible. Obviously, it's not possible for everybody. But, you know, certainly a debt-free undergrad experience was game-changing for me. And I think that to the extent that any of us can afford to do that as parents, it's a really wonderful gift, I think, that you can give your kid. I mean, I don't know, you probably have a lot of, I assume, success stories that you get to hear from parents and kids that are pretty happy that, you know, they're not having to take out a bunch of student loans, right?
Oh, we do. You can find on our website at virginia529.com. We have testimonials. We get that all the time. We hear from the kids and the parents. And it does. It makes a huge difference. And it gives you more flexibility to think about where you want to go for your undergraduate experience, for starters. You know, for a lot of families, if they've saved, then you take out some cost as a part of the equation. You even say, well, you know, even if it's a little bit more expensive for you to go out of state or to go to the private school versus the public school, although sometimes it's going to the really great public school rather than private, because some private schools have more financial aid assistance than the public schools do. But it takes that out of the equation, right? You can say, I have some more freedom and flexibility to make sure I'm choosing the right school for my students, for myself, and for my kids. And that peace of mind really helps. And again, for some families, it's the difference between having to work while the kids are in school, right? You know, they just, it's that little bit of assistance. You know, some families like their kids take on some student debt. They feel like that gives them some skin in the game. That'll make them pay more attention if they know they're going to have to pay it back. That can be a financial lesson. Nothing wrong with that. A little bit of debt isn't necessarily a bad thing. You may have different ways to pay it down. And then, as I said, some families, if you haven't saved everything for that undergraduate experience or whatever, you may want to be careful on how you pay down your 529 account. One of the nice things that's been added in recent years is that you can use a 529 account to pay down, it's limited, but up to $10,000 of student debt. So you might accumulate some during that 4 years. And then if you have money left in your 529 account, if you were parsing it out each year to make sure that you're reducing the amount of debt or out of pocket, then you can pay it down at the end. And so that's one way that you can use a 529 account to really do some financial planning, as well as pay down that debt before it starts accruing interest that will come after you graduate.
Sure. But I mean, a Virginia taxpayer, right, could make a $4,000 contribution and then pull that out and pay some student loans and then essentially get up to $10,000 cumulatively of not having to pay income tax, which, you know, that saves what, 6%, maybe $600 or something. I mean, that's certainly something.
Yep. The value of a 529 deduction in Virginia is like $250 to $300 a year for those $4,000. So it'd be actually more than that for 10. For if you're in the highest tax bracket, it's like 5.75%, I guess, in Virginia. So yes, you can absolutely do that. The best sort of decision usually is to leave it as long as possible, because you're going to have that growth amount as well. You're going to have the earnings, hopefully, and be able to pull those out tax-free. But you absolutely can if you use it for K-12 education. You can use it again now for tuition at any, you know, elementary or secondary school for a child, for the beneficiary. And, you know, we found families using that during the pandemic that I don't think planned to, because they wanted to keep their kids in some kind of an in-person setting. And so we heard some stories. They said, well, I can use my 529 account to pay for the tuition, because I don't really have it out of pocket. You know, maybe things are a little tight, but it's really important to me that my child can continue in in-person education, and more private schools were able to provide that than the public schools were over the last couple of years. And so I think they used it. Maybe they'll put their kid, if they like it, maybe they'll stay in private school if they can afford it, or maybe they'll come back to the public schools and they can refill their 529 account. You know, we also saw one of the things this year that we worked for this for a while to allow computer expenses, your peripherals, computers, buying a computer, everything that goes along with that, to be a qualified higher education expense. Seems pretty basic, but it wasn't included in our original legislation. And I always wondered, I thought, well, people have enough expenses just to pay the tuition and fees and room and board. Who has that much money left over on their 529 account? Well, we found during the pandemic, when there was so much home education for college, and they actually did use it. They needed more bandwidth. You know, they needed more computers in the household because everyone was in the same place at the same time. And so they could tap into their 529 account for some of those expenses that they might not otherwise have done. So again, the flexibility of a 529 program is really pretty helpful to families, and we've worked really hard to make them even more flexible over time.
Can I ask, like, the limitation on withdrawals that are penalty and tax-free based off of the school's, like, cost of attendance, where they include room, board, tuition, they give you a budget, and then that's the amount that 529 plan is allowed to say you can pull out? Is that how it works?
Yes, that's how it works. Exactly. And really, the only thing in that cost of attendance that's not included in the 529 expense is travel. Unfortunately, that's something that we're still working on, but because all schools have it. So, you know, it's not subject to abuse. If you know, I think they factor in, you have to fly twice a year or whatever, you know, whatever.
No tax-free spring breaks. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, it's limited. And the same thing with housing, you know, right? For some families, you can't get a penthouse on Fifth Avenue. And if you're going to school at Columbia or something and take all of that as your 529 expense, there's going to be a limitation. But you also don't have to be living in a dorm. You can live in an apartment. You can live wherever you want. And whatever that cost of attendance is from the school is the amount that you could pull out from your 529 account without any tax or penalties on the earnings. As long as it's used for qualified higher education expenses as they're defined, and that's pretty broad. To use it for room and board, you have to be going at least a half-time student, which is generally only 6 hours, so not a really heavy requirement there, but you have to be taking 6 hours at least to use your 529 account for housing and for food. We're working on other transportation costs because, again, people are using these accounts differently now, we find. If you're using it for certificate programs, for night school, for whatever, whether it's graduate courses or certificate programs or whatever, you know, you may have childcare costs. More than half of students have children. You know, there's a lot of single moms who are trying to get reskilled and upskilled and go back to school, so they have some other expenses. So we're still working on that, but there are a lot of opportunities for how you can use your 529 account, and we encourage folks to look at all of them. A few states have a requirement that the money has to be in for, I think, a year before you can pull it out and get the tax advantages, that tax deduction. But in most states, you don't. So it does not have to be in any set amount of time before you use it for qualified expenses and get that tax deduction. So that is a good tax planning tool.
Yeah. And from thinking about, like, explaining the tax benefits to people in a more basic way, you know, when I was born, if I'd put $10,000 in a 529 plan just in, like, the S&P 500 index fund, from the time that I was born until the time I went to college, which was kind of the financial crisis, was when I was an undergraduate. you know, so that was not a great time to be pulling out of a 529 plan if you had a lot in equities. But even given that bad time in the economy, the money that had been put in at the beginning when I was born would have been worth almost quadruple. You know, so $10,000 initial investment would have been $40,000 when we went to college. And that full $40,000, if used for, you know, the cost of attendance purposes, would be tax-free. And, you know, the dividends that and interest that people get paid, normally you have to pay taxes on if it's in a brokerage account. With the 529 plan, you know, that's tax-deferred growth as well. So I think one way to maybe describe the 529 plan for our listeners is basically it's like a Roth IRA for education, right? But even more flexible because you can change the beneficiaries, you can move it around really easily. Right. So it really is something to get excited about if you're a saver, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the tax advantages are just really hard to beat. They just are. I don't think there are any better ways to do it. Particularly if you look at the estate planning opportunities, the tax planning opportunities, that flexibility. And again, what you always find, that's the reason people save methodically for retirement, and there are tax advantages that go along with it. You know, government is trying to encourage people to do what's what's good for them, I guess. When you have dedicated savings, when you earmark it and you sort of put it aside and make it just a little bit harder to access, it's more likely to stay there. People will actually use it for the purpose intended. And it really helps a family. This is absolutely true. There have been a number of studies that show, and I know that I think it's not causational, but correlated, that if you emphasize, if you value education as a family, and you're talking to your kids about it and saying, we have a 529 account for you. We believe that you're going to succeed. You're going to finish, through high school, and you're going to go on and get some additional education because that's important for your quality of life. You'll be able to, make better choices about what you want to do. You'll have more options anyway about what you do in the future and get more education and, what path your life is going to take. And that's really helpful. And kids know they have that savings. And if they're committed to it as well, we find a lot of families that have their kids put some of their allowance, or if they get gifts, they say, you need to put some of this cash gift that you get from grandma, grandpa, or Uncle Fred into your 529 account. And, so that it resonates and that helps them learn good financial habits for a lifetime, right? To pay yourself first, to plan, to budget. All of those are important financial tools that families need. And a 529 account can be really helpful in that. It's something that a kid can really understand and get behind, and you can show them what it's doing. So that intentional planning and saving really does make a difference.
So for prepaid plans, I'm not sure if Virginia has one, but Florida had one when I was growing up, and they kind of mispriced it, I guess. Like, they were offering it for a lot less money than tuition inflation was going to be. And I think it even outperformed the stock market. I'm not sure. And I know that they charge a much more actuarially fair price for those now. But for states that have a prepaid option versus a 529, actually investing the money option, could you just explain like the differences between those, and which one would you recommend somebody do if they do have a prepaid option?
Absolutely. And we do have a prepaid option in Virginia. We had a different kind of a plan. We actually closed it in 2019 to make it more accessible and more affordable to more Virginians. So it's a little bit of a different option right now. Florida, I'm very familiar with. It's actually a great prepaid program. And I wouldn't say they mispriced it. It's very difficult to judge tuition inflation. It's actually come down a bit now. And usually when the markets are volatile and they drop, is when tuition goes up. So you get a sort of a mismatch in it. And some programs struggled. There were some that opened. These programs, it's really the reason that 529 exists. So let me go backwards. A prepaid program is a 529 account. They're all 529 accounts. In fact, the only reason we have Section 529 is that states developed these prepaid programs. They are the precursor to savings programs that most are familiar with. They're a little bit more difficult to run, and there's a little bit of risk on the state. So they take out market risk. So for your listeners, that's the biggest thing to think about. If you're in one of those dozen or so states that have a prepaid program, I think they're a great option. They generally are limited to residents of that state. So you can participate in our savings account. Anyone can. You need to be a Virginian to participate in ours. It's now called the Tuition Track Portfolio. So it is a portfolio within our Invest 529 program. Our prior program, you had to buy at least a semester. You had to have a contract. You could pay it in a lump sum, or you could pay it over time, but it was an installment payment. So it's a little bit more cumbersome. And, you had to make a commitment. And so, you might be making a car payment a month for a bunch of years to be able to have this. And that just doesn't work for everybody. And it was a different benefit if you went in-state versus out-of-state. And that's the way most of them are. So people said, well, I have an infant. I don't know where they're going to go to school. I don't want to buy into this and then get a less of a return if I go out of state. And the difference just in cost of Virginia public schools grew. We decided to try something different. So now you buy units. So again, you can get in for $10. You don't have that much, but you can at least get started. And over time, you purchase units. And a unit is based on average tuition at a Virginia public university, which is just under $14,000 a year right now. So a unit is just under $140. When you get 100 units, you've got 100 years of average tuition at a Virginia public university. So you get 400 units, you've got your 4 years covered. You can buy up to 1,000 units, so you can buy more than the value of average tuition. So if you want to go to a more expensive school, buy more units. Because what we're going to pay out what you pay when you buy it is today's average tuition, and what we will pay out 20 years from now or whenever you use it is average tuition then. So whatever happens to tuition, you don't have to worry about. We've taken that risk out, and we've taken the market risk out. You don't have to say, oh gosh, what if I get stuck with the markets tanking because there's a war in Ukraine right when I want to send my kid to school? We have to worry about that. You don't have to worry about that. And so I think it's a great option. And, you know, I would tell a lot of parents, if you want to be maybe a little bit more aggressive in one part of your savings, use one of our all equity portfolios, that S&P 500 that you mentioned, put some of your money in that and buy some tuition track portfolio units. That's your hedge. That's your fixed income piece, if you will. And then you might pick something different for your other portfolio. So you can save two ways. Because again, you can have multiple accounts. And so if you're a Virginia resident, I think that's a great option. And what we also changed is that we pay out average tuition regardless of where you go or what you use it for. So traditional prepaid, it is really geared towards paying your tuition fee. And the cost of it and the payout is based on some calculation of tuition and fees. And some of them, they pay whatever the public school rate is. I think in Florida, yeah, that's what it does in Florida. I think in Alaska, the payout is whatever they're in Washington State, I think it has one. I think their payout is essentially the most expensive state school, their flagship school. And that's what you get paid if you get, regardless of where you go. So the payouts are a little bit different. They're kind of quirky programs. Not every state has them because they're difficult to administer and sometimes to explain, but I think they're a great option. So if you're in the state, Pennsylvania has a program. Theirs is more of a unit-based program. Pennsylvania, Florida's is the largest. It's a great program. One of the advantages I know in Florida is if you move out of state, you can still continue to pay. And if your child comes back into Florida to attend school, you actually get the in-state rate.
Right.
Most of the prepaids don't do that. In Virginia, you know, we'll pay you that average tuition, or if you have the older prepaid contract, which is still, we still have about 60,000 of those out there, we'll pay the rate at the public school, the in-state student rate, no matter what. But if you've moved out of state and you're not an in-state student, you have to make up the difference. So again, there's some quirks to it, but I think they're great programs.
Well, obviously a lot of tools in the toolbox, and it would be great to have this as part of your holistic financial plan if you're working with a financial planner. You said earlier that you have plans that are sort of designed when working with financial planners. But, you know, a financial planner fee-only fiduciary is somebody that should be able to incorporate the decision of how much should I be putting into my 529 plan for my kids, also with, you know, how do I also save for retirement in a way that maximizes my holistic picture when it comes to maximizing FAFSA and maximizing your goals and all those kind of things, right? So one little fun question before we ask where people can find out more is, so my wife sort of has this plan for our daughter, our one-year-old called Princeton or Bust. And so we're trying to figure out, I'm joking, but we're trying to figure out how much Princeton's going to cost in 20 years. I'm more of a University of Florida kind of person. That's where I went. So I'm happy if she goes somewhere that's a, you know, low-cost in-state flagship public university. I think that's where the value is. Personally, I'm biased. But what range, like if you say you have an infant, what range of monthly savings could you think of as being, you know, realistic for somebody that wants to send their kid all expenses paid to one of those types of schools? If you just a real broad range of like low cost in state and, you know, high cost Ivy League, if you had to guess.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And one that I don't ever think about it, because as I've been in this job for a long time, I really tell families not to focus on that. My focus is do the best you can, right? You're probably not going to put too much in. There's a cap. So maybe this is a better way to do it. We try to keep up with that. So our federal rules tell us you have to have an outside, you have to have a maximum contribution level. What we think right now, that's a current cost. We just raised ours from 500,000 to 550,000. So that's our maximum cap. Now, if you have money invested and it grows over that, that's fine. We're not going to make you take it back out, but you just can't put any more money in. Once you hit 550 now, you cannot put any more money into our program. You could go to another state, but that's a different question. So that's the current cost. And there's a private letter ruling that basically says, take a look at 7 years of education at the most expensive schools in the country. That's an approximation of it, and we just kind of rounded. But So right now, if you wanted to pick the most expensive undergraduate and then graduate program, because those are more expensive, whether you're in-state or out-of-state, you know, back when I went to grad school, when I went to law school, you still got pretty much of a break if you were an in-state student. Those are mostly gone. Most grad schools charge everybody kind of the same thing. There's a little bit of a discount for an in-state student, but not much. So $550,000 right now is about it. $550,000 to $600,000 probably is what today you could spend if you went to the most expensive schools for 7 years. That gives you a little bit of an idea. It's not going to go down from there, let's put it that way. We have such a small percentage. We have a little fraction of a percent that even push that amount. So the reality for us is we are really working with families that are doing the best they can, right? That are maybe never going to be able to pay the full cost of higher ed. So rather than focusing on that big number that just seems impossible to even contemplate, I tend to focus on do what you can do. Honestly, for a young family, if you can put, let's say, 100 to 500 a month in an account, that's amazing. That would be awesome. And you would, you know, you would get it back. I can't imagine a family that wouldn't be able to find someone who could use that at some point in the future. So you're not going to get stuck with money, you know, left in an account. And then as your income grows, as you get a little bit older, as you have more disposable income, then bump it up. One of the things we're working on are some goal setting tools that will help folks with that. We do have some of them embedded within our platform. We call it Smart Savers, and you know, we have some tools to help families think about that. There are calculators, and I think every 529 website has a calculator. You can play around with that. You can put Princeton in, and it will run it out, and you can pick your inflation amount and see what it's likely to be. I just haven't looked at it because I just tend not to focus on that because it becomes kind of a scary number for a lot of people. But you absolutely can do that. Go to our website or any 529 website and find the calculators that will let you play around with that. So for those that want to play around with it and have that disposable income, go for it and put that amount in. You know, for those that start a little bit later, it's more. So if you're starting when they're in middle school or something, you might need to put $1,000 or $2,000 a month in if you really want to cover the costs. But that's not the reality for most people. So the earlier you start, the easier it's going to be, right? And then again, every time you get a raise, take a little piece of that and put it into your 529 account, just like you should do into your other savings as well. You get a bonus, put some of it into your 529 account. You get Christmas presents, put it into your 529 account. Over time, that will make the difference. It will be meaningful no matter how much you put in. And if you've really budgeted for it and done some planning, taken a look at averages. And again, on our calculators, you can find the average public school cost and you can find the average private school. So you can set that as your goal and then work towards that depending on where you're starting. It doesn't have to be scary, I guess, is my point.
Yeah, we're doing $1,000 a month for the Princeton plan. And if there's anything else on top of that she's got to cover, then the rest she can make from running a lemonade stand. So that's kind of my plan. We got it started with kind of like a lump sum of the annual gift tax exclusion. I think it was $15,000 when we opened the account. I think it's $16,000 now. And, you know, you can do a lot of other things. Obviously, you can do lump sum contributions that you average out over 5 years, right? You can have multiple adults make the maximum contribution, but there's a lot of ways you can fund these. But, you know, like you said, I think that the big thing we like to tell people with student loans that they need to do is go ahead and open a brokerage account and put $100 a month in there. It doesn't have to be $1,000 a month. We just want you to start investing so that eventually over time you'll build the habit and that'll grow and grow and grow. I think it's probably the same thing with a 529 plan, right? Go ahead and open one up, put something in there, $100 a month, whatever you can afford. And over time, you're going to save more and more and your kid's going to have to take a lot less student loan debt, right?
Absolutely. The key is just to get started, to do something, to not just sit and wonder about it. Get started. And then you can think about it. You can work with somebody. If you work with a financial advisor, they can help you with that. There are all kinds of resources online that you can find on our website and other places. There's a ton of information out there to help you figure out how to do that and how to make good choices. It's the just getting started and you go from there. So you're absolutely right on that. And that's a good point on the 5 year. For those who are fortunate enough, and again, that's one of the huge estate planning advantages. You know, it's now $16,000 a year. You can leverage that times five, times two, and it used to be 140. So it's whatever, you added another 1,000 for whatever. So it's like 150 or 60 now. that anybody can put in with absolutely no gift tax consequences at all. You don't even start using up your universal credit. It's just that's the annual gift tax exclusion. And so for estate planning purposes, for someone who's thinking about that, grandparents usually, that can be huge. If you've got multiple grandchildren, you know, you could get rid of $1 million pretty easily, put it in accounts for your kids and your grandkids. If you should die, if you should be deceased within that 5-year period, the piece that hasn't been sort of earned comes back into the estate. But if you make it past the 5 years, then all that money has been effectively removed from your estate. But as I said earlier, you still have control over it. So a parent or a grandparent, you can still change the beneficiary. It's the greatest estate planning tool ever. But yeah, those are all great ways to think about it and to jumpstart your savings. And I think it just psychologically, as you said, if you can have an initial amount, whether that's from a gift from grandparents or a bonus or whatever, then when you're looking at your account, it just feels better, right? If you've got a couple of grand in there, to see it then start to grow and to see your contributions make an impact, that can just make a psychological difference to encourage you to do more. And again, while we're working on some better goal setting tools so that you can really see that, how am I working towards my goal? Is it working? Do I need to put more in? Am I overfunding it? Am I underfunding it? And you can adjust from there. You can always put more in. You can always put less in. So you've got that flexibility.
Last question. If someone lives in Virginia or lives in one of these states where it doesn't matter where they can open up an account, they want to open up a Virginia 529 account, what do they do and what are the next steps?
So very simple. You go to Virginia529.com. It takes about 10 minutes to open up an account. You just say, you know, get started. And you need a few pieces of basic information. And this is true for any 529 program. And pretty much any state, if you put in the state name and 529, it will take you to that state's program. There's also a good resource, savingforcollege.com. It has some comparison tools and a lot of good information about saving for education, as well as the College Savings Plans Network's website, which is collegesavings.org. A really great calculator there and gives you a chance to see what the fees are for each state's program, you know, tax advantages, all of that. But anyway, let's say you go to Virginia529.com. You can open up an account in about 10 minutes. You know names, addresses, social security numbers for the beneficiary as well. And that's about it, really. Date of birth and know what bank you want to use. I encourage you to set it up for recurring contributions right then. Select your portfolios and you're good to go.
Mary, thank you so much for joining us today. And folks, save for your kids' college, get started. You heard it here, to start doing something. So that's all for this week's episode of the Student Loan Planner podcast. Until next time.